it's like sort of taking the metaphor. It's like sort of looking at like a cereal box or something. You go into a grocery store and you've got all of these boxes on the shelf, and you lift a box off and you get information. You know what's in that box. You know what it's going to do. So the design the box practice is about generating that kind of visual asset.
All right, welcome back to the Open Practice Podcast, where we have conversations about the many practices you can find in the Open Practice Library. Whether you want to find new practices or learn some new tips on practices you already know, we are here to explore them together with experts in the field. I'm Matt Takani, an agile evangelist and lover of team efficiency practices that improve product value delivery. With me, I also have my fabulous, wonderful, handsome Jerry.
Hello, hello. Thanks, Matt. My eloquent introduction to rival yours is I'm also a guy. I'm a guy here that likes to say words. Also like Agile. I like Agile. I like human-centered design. I like product management. And I think I'll probably just stop it there. I also like doing podcasts. How about that?
Underselling your amazing ability to generate human-centered conversations with any team that you happen to touch.
The key to Agile, in my opinion, human-centered design. Love. Maybe we can tease that out in another episode, but if it's
maybe
Agile's
maybe
all about learning.
Maybe I'll just interview you one time, and it'll just be like a Jerry and Matt conversation.
No, that sounds awful.
Yeah, but that's not today.
We've got somebody way better than that lined up.
Today, we have an amazing practice to discuss called Design the Box. And with us, we have an expert that even used it to spark inspiration and determine strategy for his own company. So Tim Beattie, welcome back to the podcast. He was here a while ago when we did a fireside chat, and we're super happy to have you in our conversation to talk about Design the Box. But Tim, welcome, welcome. How are you? What have you been up to?
Thank you, Tim. Thank you. Alone time with Matt and Jerry. This is very exciting. So thanks for having me on. This is cool. I'm such a big fan of this podcast. I've listened to every episode, sometimes more than once.
You're the guy. And, you're that guy that's listening.
I'm that guy. That's why your numbers are going up.
Tim. Yeah, all right. I'm well, this is guy. For you, buddy.
So awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Tim, I'm going to throw an easy question at you, or I hope it's an easy question. If you could remove any food from existence, what would that food be and why?
Without a doubt, without any doubt whatsoever, that food is sweet corn.
Sweet corn.
Or any kind of corn on the cob, or the little bright yellow cubes thing, sweet corn, frozen sweet corn. I hate sweet corn.
Are we talking about like the mushy corn? Like they cut it off the cob and then they mix it in with stuff and it's almost soupy? Is it that, or is it just the actual, just the corn itself?
Any of that, any form, any texture that is derived from the sweet corn or corn on the cob, I just find disgusting. I think it tastes disgusting. I always have. I've just never been able to acquire that taste. And it's bright yellow. I just don't think we should eat food that is bright yellow.
Like pineapple?
I don't like pineapple either. I don't like pineapple either. Right. Although it's not bright yellow. I do love bananas, but then that's got to peel. You got to peel the bananas back.
And yeah, that's the outside. Really
bright yellow. Yeah.
Well, if you're gonna put that into a fruit salad, it would definitely be the easier end of prep time.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
But we're learning about you here, Tim, because I don't think a lot of people understand that you have such a good sense of humor. But that answer, that was pretty corny to me. Oh boy. All right. So yellow food products, not high on Tim's list.
Especially sweet corn. Yeah.
Especially sweet corn. Thanks for answering that. All right. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, which is really, really important for us to all digest. Food joke. Let's get into the practice. So Matt had said at the top of the podcast, we're here to talk about Design the Box. So Tim, could you give us just a rundown of what it is? Like, what's the target outcome? What are you really trying to achieve with this practice, and when would you use it?
Yeah, so design the box is, I guess it's exactly what it says in the box. It's a practice where people almost take the idea of, I'd like to present my vision, I'd like to present my idea, my product or idea, or my service idea, and most recently I used it for my organization's idea. And I'm going to present it visually, and it's like sort of taking the metaphor. It's like sort of looking at a cereal box or something. You know, you go into a grocery store and you've got all of these boxes on the shelf, and you lift a box off and you get information. You know what's in that box. You know what it's going to do. So the design the box practice is about generating that kind of visual asset. When do you use it? I tend to use it quite early on in discovery. If I'm doing a loop of discovery, it might be one of the very early things. But I actually think it would be a fun thing you could do at pretty much any stage of a product's journey. So if you had some new team members onboarding, it might be a really cool way to get some fresh new ideas. Or if you're starting a whole new feature area of a product, it might be a really good way to kickstart that. But for me, you know, most recently, I used it right at the beginning of a whole new journey I was going on, where I was setting up my own company with my co-founder, and I sat down with her and we said, let's do this design the box practice, and let's draw out our company in a box, and let's present it back to each other, and let's see kind of what kind of that generates, what conversation that generates, and what ideas we can spin off that. And it's just been an enormously powerful tool for us.
I love hearing how it's like not just writing it down individually, but it's presenting it back to one another and articulating it to each other. Because it's not just what you come up with, but it's also how do you present it, the use cases, the context that you generate as you're kind of doing the presentation can really serve as like a really cool conversation point. I'm kind of interested in also, like, did you physically do this or did you do it virtually as we're kind of like entering in the hybrid world, or does it even matter if it's physical or virtual?
So we did it physically. We were in the room together, but we both took independent time. I think we took about 15 minutes to produce our box, and we had lots of different sticky notes, and we had some real cardboard so we could really, you know, so you could touch it and feel it, and it wasn't just, you know, a piece of paper. I think you can do it virtually as well, as we've seen with so many practices. And, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised in the last couple of years about how many of these things translate. But I think for me, there was an increased level of energy and excitement when we started sharing the ideas. It was like, oh, and it could do this. Oh, and it could. Oh, and what about this? And oh, how about this for an idea? And that kind of energy just seems to come when you're presenting something physical that you're looking at and you're touching it and you're starting to feel it. And it was just awesome getting that kind of conversations going when you're in the room together.
Yeah, I love, I've done it before in the past. I've not done it virtually before. And I think that could be a cool thing to try to do, especially now that there's so many remote people, I think would easily translate. But I've done the physical one and it was so cool to have such a tangible thing that you could show people. And one of the things I love about it is you're almost thinking like a marketing play, right? But what I love about that is it forces you to know exactly who you are trying to communicate to and what you're trying to communicate to them to grab their attention. And if you want their attention, you got to understand them and what their problems are, or what they're trying to buy in that moment, which is really cool. It's a great, like, getting back to the human-centered design thing, it's a great way to put your users and your customers at the center of the decision that you're making when you're thinking about where might this thing go in the future. I'm wondering, Tim, either thinking back to when you ran it very recently with the design of your own company, or times that you've run it in the past, have you kind of collected some facilitation tips for this specific practice that people might not see, like when they read about it and want to experiment it with the first time, but you've kind of uncovered through the running of it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, most recently it was just two people, but I've run this with, maybe 20 plus people. I think it doesn't matter of the number of people, even with two, the importance of using liberating structures, I think, is super important. And the 1-2-4-all technique that I think is also a practice in the Open Practice Library, I just find such a important facilitation mechanism. So we started, we worked independently, we time boxed. So, we said, right, we're going to give ourselves a time box. I think we took 15 minutes. So we diverged and then we converged. If, for two people, that's just a 1 and 2. But when there's a larger group, you then, bring pairs of people together. So they've got that conversation time. So everybody gets a voice and everybody has an opportunity to kind of share their ideas, because everybody started individually. And I think having that time to converge ideas is the real kind of sweet spot of this practice. Because yes, you get a really good representation of stuff that's in your head, and suddenly you've got it now in on a box or in a box, and you've talked about the ingredients of that box and the objects in that box. But I think having the conversation, that's the opportunity that you start to get that shared passion or those shared vision, and you're starting to bring different people's ingredients into your company's box or your product's box eventually. So I think a strong facilitation tip is not to underestimate the amount of time to have that convergence of ideas and that shared alignment. And then the final tip I would say is these are, and I'm saying this about 3 months after I last ran it, I've got my boxes here, leaving them visible, leaving them accessible, to the team, revisiting them and elaborating on them. As you were saying, Jerry, there's something for everyone in this, because some of your early marketing ideas are starting to form when you design the box. Some of your product design and development and engineering ideas are sourcing here. For us, some of our operational capability was coming out of there. So revisiting it, in a month's time and 2 months and 3 months, and reminding yourself of stuff, some of those ideas and how they've evolved and changed, maybe with other practices, I think is really important. So I think, yeah, using it as an information radiator, having them up on the wall if they can go up on the wall, or having them virtual and taking the time to revisit, I think is a really important technique to really maximize the impact and the outcome of using a practice like this.
Yeah, I'm now thinking back. I don't know why, but I'm thinking now cereal boxes, and I keep thinking of like some of my favorite cereal. And I bet anyone listening has their own favorite cereal, unless that's actually the food that you would get rid of.
Yeah,
That's perfectly acceptable. But if you think
my
about
cereal is bright yellow, whatever that is. Tim is not all about that.
Oh, absolutely. You may have got me there, Jerry, because Lucky Charms that you get when I'm over and visits to the States, those Lucky Charms are amazing, and I'm pretty certain there's some bright yellow
There
in
is,
there
but
for
let's
you.
be honest, it's not real food. So we'll put it
Okay.
in the category.
So that's
The
allowable. Okay.
hydrated marshmallows, gotta love them. But like the
Magnificent.
cereal boxes, right? They design their box, they're marketing it out, and they're looking to convey what that vision is for that cereal. And it never stayed the same. It's always evolved as you got to know your customer base or look to shift your customer base. But I wanted to hone in on the bits of information that is there, and that changes over time. But there's also certain key bits of information to really look for. So when you do design the box, Tim, what kind of information do you want to see on the box or in the box?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I need to have just enough information on the box to really understand why this product exists and what it's trying to address. What is it trying to solve, or what's it trying to gain? And this is some of the key messages I think about, if I pick this up and I read only this, am I going to leave with that? Oh, that looks interesting. I think I could use that. I want to know more. If I want to know more, maybe I turn over the box, and that's where you get the smaller print. So it might be, well, okay, so there's something that's appealed to me on the front. Visually, it looked really nice. Great cereal boxes have always got, characters or something fun on the front, which I look for because I love fun in anything. But then I go to the back and I start to get the detail. Okay, so these are the different things that are in the box. This is what's included. This is what's not included. You know, for us, that was we have a software product in our organization, so it was clear that there was an outcomes engine, a software product. Then there were a series of service offerings, and these are all separate components. So I could see that information. I wasn't going to get all of the detail about them. I'd have to go somewhere else to do that, but I would get that clarity. And then I think there's something around the ingredients. You know, what is it that makes this different? And is there anything in there that is a really important ingredient? So this might be, you know, some of the principles or values that, you know, that this product is really going to speak to. You know, and that's, you know, just similar to when you kind of are trying to really understand what's actually inside the food or whatever that's in the cereal box. So those are probably the three things. I'm looking for something visual and explain the why. Then I'm getting the contents and the what, and then I'm starting to sort of unpick and get the lower level ingredients, you know, that speaks to the values and the principles. That's probably what I look in there for.
Yeah, sometimes those questions can be kind of hard, but in the end, right, the design, the box is really that time box in the beginning is really meant to get a idea out there and to spark the conversation. You're not going to get it right the first time out the gate. You know, like, what was it? Honey Nut Cheerios, right? With the bee, the honeybee, right? Who knows? Maybe the honeybee wasn't the first thing, but they just had like honeycomb and they had that there, but then that was too close to the honeycomb cereal. So you needed to have a conversation and evolve whatever that is. But if you don't put yourself out there with those possible features, those defining details that you just think of in the beginning, and then leveraging those liberating structures of the conversation, the 1-2-4 all, and just really sparking the conversation and giving room for people to speak, you won't evolve into something that is sticky, that is actually what you are going for to convey a cohesive vision.
Yeah. Those time box constraints can often really help with a lot of your innovation and your ideation, because it forces you to just get stuff out of your head really quickly. And, you know, following Matt, I just want to give a shout out and thanks to our sponsors for this episode. So Cheerios, Honeycomb, and Sweetcorn. So thanks for your continued support. Just kidding. No lawsuits, please. We are not sponsored by these companies, but you know, go try them on your own. Just don't tell Tim.
So Tim, you actually mentioned something, and I want to pull the thread at least a little bit, that you said after you design the box and you get some of these conversations really kind of sparked, there's other practices that you can really leverage following this one. And I'm wondering what chained practices that you found incredibly beneficial.
Yeah. So I guess design the box is a really quick way to get some super early ideas for features. And I use those ideas to then start to form hypothesis statements that we then want to go and test. Because, you know, when we're doing this, we literally are spending 15 minutes and we're getting stuff out and onto a box. So I think there's a couple of ways you can go here. I think, you know, you can then start to evolve and kind of get to the next level and elaborate on some of those ideas. You know, so something like Crazy It's a really good way, where you're kind of going from a single box image to a bit more of a flow and a story and starting to piece together. So it's a nice sort of another visual practice that allows you to kind of just think that through at the next level of detail. And then I think, you know, moving to even greater granularity, we did some value proposition canvases, business model canvassing. We did an impact map, because, you know, the impact map is another awesome practice. So all of these great feature ideas that are coming out and you're starting to draw in your box or in your crazy hits, but you want to connect them to a measurable impact. So those are some practices that have helped evolve the product. And then we've been running some marketing practices. We did a content strategy. And again, it's just a really useful, the box that you've designed, just to glance back at every now and again, and it just triggers some thoughts to think, oh, is that worth putting through a crazy hit session? Or, have we extracted all of the goodness on that box and put it onto the impact map? So it's like a lot of discovery practice. They feed each other really well, and it's just worth kind of going around those loops again. And you know, especially as it starts to evolve and the product starts to come to life, to then, you know, see how that's been affected.
I think I got goosebumps hearing about chaining design the box with like vision statements, goal statements, and then using impact mapping. And I was like, ooh, so exciting to hear, because it is going from strategy to practical, like almost like metrics driven value propositioning.
Yeah. And you can also use your box to test with some people, to test with some users, get some feedback. We've had to talk to some investor stakeholders recently, and this has been a really good tool to try and explain our vision in a way. And I heard a story just yesterday, actually, where I think Design the Box would have been really, really helpful. I think it goes back about 10 years ago, where there was a I've got to say they were a biscuit company, but I realized biscuit may not, cookies, I guess, is what they'd be known as over in the US, but in the UK, we call them biscuits. And I think about 10 years ago, they were designing and they'd done lots of research and lots of product development for the perfect taste of this cookie. And it was amazing. And they packaged it all up and they'd done all of the branding. And then they did the final thought, right, let's go and test this with some users. And in the first user testing session, there was an 8-year-old kid who took one look at the pictures on the biscuit and said, looks like poo.
I didn't realize they asked one of my sons for their feedback.
And this is after years of product development that they went and showed what could have been just, they could have just designed that box. And apparently the whole thing had to be scrapped because they tested it and other kids kept saying, this biscuit, this cookie looks like a poo. So it's kind of funny to think, you know, how such a simple practice could save you millions and millions of dollars by just visually testing what the box might look like and allow you to pivot if it looks like poo.
And with the right people, right? So running with the cereal analogy, you have a primary and a secondary audience, right? And it just depends on who you're targeting. If it's more of a kid's cereal, you have to think about the parents and the kids, right? And you can't just overly focus on one, because the parents are the one actually spending their money. They're the ones making the decision, but the kids are the ones that you want to grab the attention. So you need to make sure that you're really thinking about, you know, what are all of my potential user personas? And then let's prioritize the ones that we need to focus on first, which is a really cool lesson in that. And one of the things that I like is, Tim, how you kind of framed like, hey, design the box is a great way to kind of ideate and then get a concept for a starting point. And then you follow it on with practices where you layer in additional things to be like, okay, if we're making something that we think could be desirable, then, you know, translate that to a business model canvas where we figure out, now is this business feasible and viable for us, right? I was just realizing, I think one of the cool things you could do with Design the Box also is run a landing page experiment following it. So that's almost like the digital version of a Design the Box, which is, nothing exists yet, but you have all of the marketing like content there that communicates the problem that you're solving and the solution that you have in order to validate it without building anything other than a landing page, which is super like low risk. So you can even use that as like, you know, a way to be able to rapidly prototype and validate that you're on onto something with the market.
Absolutely. Designed a digital box. That's a nice nice variation, I think. That's a great one.
Might there you go.
One as well.
We'll coin that if you haven't already, although it's yours first, Tim. I get it.
I expect a new update to the Open Practice Library from one truly Tim Beattie.
You can guarantee it.
One of the other things that you got me thinking about, Tim, is the thought about like going back and looking at like revisiting the box that you came up with later on in the product life cycle. And I think that's important to not only remind yourself of how you got to where you are, but also when you're diverging in thought, when you're ideating and then you converge on certain ideas, that just marks a moment in time about which ones do we think have the most chance for success right now. But as we know, working in products, like things change all the time, right? We're in ever-changing markets. And when you do these sessions, there's a whole backlog of ideas that you didn't run with because of certain reasons, but that doesn't mean they're not viable later on. So especially when you're thinking about the early stage of a startup or a new product, it's very greenfield and you want to think more about MVP. So some things might not make the MVP, but there could be ideas that you could layer into the product down the road. And it's good to go back and revisit those ideas that weren't used instead of, you know, like always trying to just run new things. I like having that catalog of things that you can look back on too.
Yeah. Yeah. It almost makes me think you should have a, maybe when you design the box, you should stamp a sell by date or a best before date to almost force you to go back and, you know, not put the box in the back of the cupboard where everything becomes a bit stale inside it, but you do have to get it out and possibly refill it with something newer every now and again. But yeah, revisiting is and going back to things. I mean, even when I look at the box now, I'm saying, oh, great. Actually, some of that did translate. A lot of it pivoted. And there's some stuff I completely forgotten about, but that might be useful to come back to another day. So amazing source of feature work for the future.
That is that is amazing. I can't believe that we missed that on our tips earlier. I love the expiration date of your design the box to force you to go through that. Put that in your calendar. Make it a thing.
Yeah.
Don't let that box go stale. Tim, thank you so much for all of the amazing insights. And, you know, we alluded to it a little bit, but Tim, if people want to get connected with you about, like, you know, I want to design the box a little bit more. I want to know what Tim is actually up to. Feel free for any websites, books, other like articles that you're writing. Where are you going to be? How can people get connected with you?
So I am getting increasingly active on Twitter. So my personal Twitter handle is TDBT, which is my surname. I'm going to spell that out because it doesn't come across that well on audio. So TDBEATTIE. So that's my personal Twitter. The company that I've co-founded is called Stellify. And we're going to be putting a lot of content out on the Stellify Twitter handle. Stellify is spelled a little bit differently because of an AI play. So it's spelled STELLAFAI. So Stellify, which is the name of our company. It's a new way to help teams collaborate, visualize, and measure progress to help them navigate their journey to stellar outcomes. And Design the Box is absolutely one of our tools in our kit bag that we use to do that. So yeah, follow Stellify on Twitter and on LinkedIn. On our website's live as well, www.stellify.com. So you can see the result of the box or the emerging result of the box if you check out that site.
That was awesome. Tim, I know people didn't get to really see your face, but I am pretty sure you just read your slogan from your Design the Box.
May well have done. A lot of those words were on the box. One of our brand statements.
Amazing use of the practice in a continued form.
Yeah, you never know. You keep your Design the Box, because if you ever come on the podcast in the future, listeners, you're going to need that.
You're going to need your box.
Yeah, you better bring your box.
Don't leave home without your box.
Yeah, bring that box. Everywhere. Don't show up at all. All right. Tim, thanks so much. Always a pleasure chatting. Oh, so excited for you and your new venture. And I really hope that listeners go and check out your website and see not only how your Design the Box practice translated into, like, you know, a real tangible thing that helped kind of scope a business idea for you, but also, you know, if they see some value in your services, reaching out to you and following you on the socials and all that stuff. Always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on, Tim.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast, and I love this podcast. So guys, please keep doing it. Don't stop.
And thank you, all you wonderful listeners. Please stay tuned and stay open. Cut. Tim.
I expected to hear the music there.
You killed me when you said don't leave home without your box.
Hey, grab that box.
Add that to the quote wall.
Thank you so much for the time, Tim. I would truly appreciate sharing your expertise. In the continued fashion, regardless of where we are, we shall always find ourselves out in the open.
Oh, dang. Next season's tagline.
Did you just read that from your box?
He did. He totally did. Dang.
Never leave home without it.
That was stellar, man.
Stella?
Stellar.
Stellar. You stellified that.
Stellify your box.